Francisco. This is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area. Coming up, we head to the mission for the Day of the Dead.
After you explain them about the meaning of the Day of the Dead, what is Día de los Muertos, oh my God, they're, you see many people transforming themselves.
Then we visit a ghost town that even scared the authorities.
One of the quotes we have is one guy saying, yeah, the game warden never came here, he probably would have been shot.
And we'll take you on a journey to the other side to tell you the story behind this week's audiograph mystery sound.
Is there anyone in here that'd like to speak with us today?
Are you listening? It's our Halloween edition of Cross Currents.
We're in the season that's all about change. The leaves turn from green to gold. We turn to our winter coats and sweaters. And the time changes to shorter days and longer nights. It's also a time of moving between worlds, when ghosts and goblins are part of how we think of what and who we've lost. This weekend, thousands of people around the Bay Area will be celebrating Día de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. It's a colorful event that can feel like a celebration while also offering an opportunity for reflection. In the past few years, though, the balance between cheer and solemnity has been changing, and some mission residents feel the meaning of Day of the Dead is getting lost. What's more, that loss reflects a change they're seeing in the neighborhood itself. Lila Day brings us the story.
If you walk down Mission Street this weekend, you'll see family members holding pictures of loved ones in one hand and candles in another. You may see ofrendas, small altars set up to pay tribute to people who have passed away. It's a tradition that's been present in the mission for years, but how it's celebrated depends on who you ask.
To be completely honest, the only thing I know about the Day of the Dead, or Día de los Muertos, I think it's called, is from high school Spanish. They would hide like a skeleton in a cake.
I mean, I know it's been going on forever in different countries.
I love makeup and drag queens and stuff.
I go every year. I love it. A lot of people know what we're celebrating, and a lot of people don't, but that's okay.
Those were the voices of Corey Lambert, Jenna Barber, Chuck Dibben, and Connie Rivera. You can meet Rivera yourself on the corner of 24th Street and Bryant. She and her family run a local store called Mixcoatl Arts and Crafts that sells everything from Mexican wrestling masks to the small painted sugar skulls for the Day of the Dead. Rivera has lived in the mission for 25 years, and she's seen the celebration of the holiday change over that time.
And it's nice when you see people coming, bringing flowers or candles and that, but it's not nice when you see costumes and all this party night.
Rivera thinks this shift away from the holiday's roots may have something to do with Day of the Dead falling so close to Halloween. But others think it's symbolic of how the mission itself is changing. Earlier this month, nearly 200 people gathered at the Brava Theater on 24th and York Street to protest the evictions of businesses and long-term residents.
This city is changing into a place where families are not welcome, where elders are not welcome, where artists are not welcome, where workers are not welcome.
Come on now.
The anti-eviction march is part of an ongoing campaign to show residents how the people who are being priced out are the very ones who make the neighborhood so attractive to live in.
What do we want? Rent freeze! When do we want it? What do we want?
The chanting that day ended at the Mission Cultural Center, where the Day of the Dead procession will be different from years past.
This year, we are taking Day of the Dead back.
Martina Ayala works at the center.
Really, the processions, you know, some of them have turned into Burning Man or Carnival, and that's not what Day of the Dead is about.
Ayala says this year the exhibit at the Mission Cultural Center will mourn the death of the old mission.
We are creating a procession that allows us to feel like we could bring our families. Many families are no longer going to the traditional processions here in the mission because there's too many people who drink and it's making it unsafe. And so many Latino families are no longer feeling part of something that is their cultural tradition for many years.
Inside the center, Ayala walks me through the altars. In one corner, there are two photos with candles. One is the image of the Virgin de Guadalupe, Mexico's patron saint. And the candle next to it has the Virgin's body, but her face is replaced with that of Facebook owner Mark Zuckerberg. Ayala points out others.
This altar is created by Anita de Lucio, and she is dedicating it to Discolandia, another record shop that was iconic that is no longer here.
These altars fall in line with the socially conscious exhibits of years past, but this year, it's more personal.
I just feel there's this cultural eviction that's going on, and it's creating this cultural tourism where they're just going to leave enough people to create a semblance of the mission. I think people should resist that.
Rene Yanez has been organizing Day of the Dead celebrations in the mission since the 1970s. He's part of the mission's art scene as a whole. When he says cultural eviction, he's talking about himself. After 35 years of living and making art in the mission, he was recently evicted under the Ellis Act. That's a state law that allows landlords to take back their units.
I'd like to stay in the mission, but I went and looked at a place 2 days ago. Yeah, I can't afford like $3,000 for a place that's smaller than mine now.
Rene Yanez is precisely the kind of person who residents like Martina Ayala of the Mission Cultural Center are trying to keep in the neighborhood. Yanez founded the Galleria de la Raza in the mission back in 1970, and he's curated exhibits and protests around everything, from denouncing apartheid to labor movements that march down Mission Street.
I mean, many in San Francisco say you are the mission.
Well, they call me el padrino.
Padrino, the godfather. For years, he's overseen the curation of the Day of the Dead exhibit at the South of Market Arts Organization. This year, his focus is a little different. Yanez and his partner both have cancer, and he's lost friends from the disease.
I'm also emphasizing cancer as a theme to the artist, so we can communicate to the audience within a realm of Day of the Dead.
Much in the way he's fighting his illness, he's decided to fight his eviction because he's seen the consequences firsthand in other parts of the city.
I saw what happened to the Fillmore. There was a place called Minnie's Can Do. It's a wonderful place that was blues and jazz and cultural expressions of the neighborhood. But they tore all that down. They put this ugly gray buildings and took the soul out. Now they put other jazz there, but it's mostly like not for the people that live there, but for the tourists. It's happening to the mission, but should resist, should examine what it is that these developers and people are doing.
Yanez and his family have until July to find a new home. So this year he'll continue to celebrate Dia de los Muertos as he's always done, by going to art exhibits. And if you want to celebrate by partying, Yanez says good for you. He's not going to judge.
I try not to be judgmental, because in the beginning when I started celebrating Day of the Dead, people thought we were a death cult. In Day of the Dead, you know, it's not just mourning, but I do promote the sense about celebrating life.
In a way, that duality is built into Dia de los Muertos. And maybe it will become part of what it means to live in the mission as well. For Cross Currents, I'm Leela Day.
Mucho cuidado, señores, porque la muerte anda lista. En el panteón de Dolores ya nos tiene una fosita para los compositores y uno que otro periodista. Licenciados y doctores, todos están en la lista. Tucu, tucu, tiki, taca, que recanija, calaca, cuando menos lo pensamos.
That story was produced with help from KALW's Rachel Wong. The Day of the Dead procession, to honor the businesses and people that are no longer in the mission, is this Sunday, November 2nd. It starts at 4 p.m. at the Mission Playground on Valencia, between 19th and 20th Streets. You can also see The Day of the Dead curated by Renee Yanez at SOMARTS until November 9th. Pero pasadito el tiempo quedan igual de pelones. Tucu tucu tiki taca, que recanija calaca. Débiles y poderosos, de morir nadie se escapa. Llevamos el mismo fin, en petateo en petaca. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. We go looking for ghosts in old places. Hollywood has trained us to think of ghost towns as these dusty, abandoned communities deep in the desert. So it may surprise you to learn that there's a ghost town right here in the San Francisco Bay Area. And that means this place was anything but dry and dusty, and its story is not exactly about ghosts. The town was called Drawbridge. KALW's Stephen Short tells us more in this installment of The Source.
A ghost town usually starts off as a boom town where lots of people arrive to harvest a rich natural resource. That may be raw minerals or timber, which can't go anywhere, but sometimes the natural resource can move.
Around the 1900, about 250,000 ducks every year were sold in the markets of San Francisco. It's a huge number.
That's Louise Pubels.
I'm Louise Pubels, and I'm the senior curator of history.
She says a good portion of those 250,000 ducks came from the marshes around a town called Drawbridge,
which flourished on what's now called Station Island, which is near Alviso, so in the South Bay.
Today, that's within the Fremont city limits. But back in the late 1800s...
it was this town that was totally off the grid, and it was really people who, for the most part, were not fancy sport hunters.
A hunting we will go. But, Pupils notes, nobody builds a community out of duck hunting cabins either.
And how this town got started is in around 1880, a railroad company built a track across two of the major sloughs in the South Bay, Mud Slough and Coyote Creek Slough. By law, you couldn't block any of these. This is how most of the major shipping went in and out of the bay. So they put drawbridges there, hence the name of the town.
And hence the name of the island Drawbridge inhabited, Station Island. The station agent was out there all by himself, and his sole duty was to operate those drawbridges. Now, there was plenty of train traffic in the 1880s, but that still gave this lonely man plenty of time to think.
And he realized there's really great duck hunting here.
So the agent invited some pals to join him, and, well, word got around. And the next thing you knew, these little hunting cabins started popping up. The railroad company soon heard about this, but rather than evicting these possible trespassers, they added scheduled weekend stops, thus selling more tickets.
And it boomed.
I say it's duck season, and I say fire!
These were regular Joes. They were people who worked probably in canneries or other kinds of businesses during the week. On the weekends, they would go up to Drawbridge and they would do market hunting, which is hunting as many ducks as you possibly could to sell to restaurants, butcher shops.
Charles Luce, one of the last residents of Drawbridge, told researchers in the late 1970s that people would arrive on the weekends from San Francisco carrying big suitcases, big empty suitcases. On Sunday night, they'd get back on the train wearing the same clothes they arrived in, and the suitcases would be full of ducks. Remember those 250,000 dead ducks mentioned earlier? Keep in mind that that's just the number of ducks sold through market hunting. It doesn't include those consumed by the hunters, or their acquaintances, or those that got away.
Mark.
Just for comparison, the current average of all the waterfowl, not just ducks, declared by hunters is about 2,100 per year. That's less than one-tenth of the number back then. So you can see why market hunting came to the attention of the authorities.
That practice was outlawed in the 19-teens, and that's why we have a Fish and Game Commission now.
But that didn't mean the hunting stopped. Pubels says hunters devised a way to get around the ban on market hunting. They still took the ducks to hotels in town, but they didn't sell them. Instead, they played a game called duck roulette. Somebody bet some ducks, somebody else bet some money.
And somehow by the end of the evening, all the ducks went one way, all the money went the other way. Nobody had actually bought ducks or sold ducks, but somehow the same effect had taken place.
Walk to the back of the Oakland Museum's recreation of a drawbridge hunting shack, and you'll see a particular style of boat that was unique to the South Bay, a marsh-fitted duck boat. It's very shallow so that it silently glides through the water, and the bow is extremely sharp.
Because of the nature of the marshes, so, you know, they have these very sinuous curves to them of open water, and that's how you can move through them. You don't kind of plow your way straight through the plants, but they do naturally have these little streams and inlets and sloughs in them.
So the ducks never had a chance?
Afraid not, no.
Drawbridge had a pretty good run as a boomtown. Pubels says there were close to 100 structures there at its high point in the 1920s. Some were actual homes, some were businesses such as hotels, and most were gun clubs. But some people continued to live in and visit Drawbridge well into the 1970s. Today, what was once Drawbridge is part of wetlands that are off limits to the public. There's nothing to see now anyway, except for decaying buildings sinking into the marsh. And that's the way the Fish and Game officials like it. They now control the area as part of the Don Edwards National Wildlife Refuge. Ducks and other birds like it that way, too. Their numbers are increasing now that the water quality is improving, and not as many are being shot. The estimate of all waterfowl currently wintering in the bay is about 500,000. They still have a long way to go before returning to those massive numbers of the 1800s. But stick around another 100 years, and who knows? They might just outnumber us again. At the Oakland Museum of California, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
The story of Drawbridge is part of an exhibit called Above and Below at the Oakland Museum of California. Find more information online at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound.
So what we'll do is we'll start recording, we'll ask a question, we'll wait 10 seconds, see if we got anything. So here we go. I'll start recording in 3, 2, 1. Is there anyone in here that'd like to speak with us today?
We asked you to tell us what that was and where we recorded it. To tell you the truth, I'm not sure I really want to know. KALW's Julie Kane was braver than I am. She went to meet up with a real-life ghost hunter to explore an historic estate in Hayward, where some visitors have had some very strange encounters.
My name is Brendan Alvis. I'm the founder of the American Paranormal Research Association. The clearest voice we ever collected, actually here at the Meek Estate, I'll show you an example. That was the instance with the reporter from the Tri-City Voice. And again, he was holding my digital voice recorder as well as his. Him being a reporter, he likes to document everything. And at the exact time he asked this question, my recorder collects a disembodied voice. His recorder goes to complete static. And still to this day, he doesn't know how that happened. He still owns that recorder and it still hasn't happened since. So you will hear Simon ask the question, then you'll hear a very clear voice after that.
Can you come as close to the red light as possible? Can you come as close to the red light as possible?
So tell me what this voice is saying.
We believe it to be, again, it's open to interpretation. Other people hear different things, but we believe it's saying, yes, I would. I died in here. So you want to hear it again?
Yes.
So.
Ah!
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go ahead and try and make our way down to that cistern and see if we can get down into that. Turn on this light. There's another one down here we can turn as well. Watch out for the spider webs and whatnot. This is a little here. So one thing I will tell you, it's a really narrow staircase, very steep, so do not put your hands against the left-hand side of the wall. You can see there's nails sticking out. So when we go down, be very careful and do not try and put your hands against the wall, okay? And right here we can stop. You can see some of this mold growing here, but see the names?
Can you read those?
See, it looks like it says Helen, Sam. That's the only ones I could read. Not quite sure what the other ones are saying, but you can definitely see the name Helen and Sam. This area has had some activity, and people have reported feeling sensations down here, as well as hearing the voices of a child. Definitely one of the spookier places in the building.
Should we ask a question?
Yeah, let's do it. So we'll go ahead and start a recording in 3, 2, 1. Is there a young girl down here that would like to say something to us? That was my stomach, sorry. It's in session. That's one of the many things, you know, that happens. We'll go in a location for hours and hours at a time and sometimes get nothing. So it's just kind of a, you know, right place at the right time kind of thing. So
well, there's no winner this week. We think you all might have just been too afraid to call. But don't worry, we'll have another contest next week. Here's a sneak peek at next week's sound. Think you know what that is? Give us a call at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And you may be next week's winner of a KALW t-shirt. And tell us where we should record next. We love hearing from you. Go to KALW.org to hear more from Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. And that's it for today's Halloween edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Rebecca Burungi, Julie Kane, Leela Day, Maya DePaola Hanika, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Christina Loring, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Ryan Miller, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our senior producer. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. You're listening to the Cartoon Jazz Orchestra. They're having a family-friendly CD release party at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley on Sunday. The cartoon-inspired Looney Tunes begin at 8 o'clock. And one last note, we're done for the week, but don't forget to turn your clocks back an hour this weekend. Yes, more sleep. Daylight savings time ends Sunday morning at 2 a.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hana Banana. To find out what that means, go on Facebook, KALW.